Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A fabulous Friday feast, friends. A little alliteration there for you on this Friday. And it's a big one. It's a big one. It's the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima. Why don't you call in right now? 888-914-9149. Got a couple phone lines available. Grab a vine right now. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And you can also find me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E. Clark with an E. Hey, you know who followed me on Twitter today? Jim McMahon, the punky QB from the 1986 Chicago Bears, the Super Bowl 20 champions, my favorite football player of all time. So I'm pretty stoked about that. And you can follow me too, at Cale Clark. The show account is at Cale Clark Show. And you can email the program, as always, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And yes, it is the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And today, of course, commemorates the first of six times that Our Lady appeared to the shepherd children in Fatima, Portugal in 1917. And it culminated, of course, with an appearance to a lot more, although they didn't see Mary. But there was, of course, the miracle of the sun on October the 13th, 1917. And on a personal note, this day is also very important in my journey because on this day, this is the first day that I ever saw my wife 18 years ago. It was on the March for Life in Canada, but I was too shy to talk to her that time. And I, by God's grace, I ran into her later on and I got my courage up. And this time I actually talked to her. So, the first time ever I saw your face. Okay. We're going to put away the karaoke machine or maybe not, because I want to start off this show on Our Lady of Fatima's feast day with a little song I like to call, "Oh, Little Town of Fatima." Yes, that's right. I'm going to butcher the old Christmas standard and change the words. You might be wondering, of all places in the world, why would Our Lady choose to appear in Fatima, the little town of Fatima, Portugal? The answer may surprise you. And I just found, we've heard a lot today on Relevant Radio about the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And I think this is so amazing because this comes from the pen of the very prolific Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. And in so many ways, with his media ministry, Life is Worth Living, everything he did on television, really very much a spiritual father in some ways of Relevant Radio, right? Because we want to reach the world for Christ through the media. That's our mission. And he did that so well. And obviously, he wrote a number of books as well. He wrote a really, really beautiful book about Mary called The World's First Love, Mary, Mother of God. It's just a really, really nice book. And he wrote this back in 1952. And it's really amazing because he gets into why Fatima. Why Fatima? Why did Mary appear there? Now don't forget, this was long before, we're writing in 1952, long before the events of 9/11, long before the war on terror, the war in Afghanistan, long before the capture and the elimination of Osama bin Laden. But he talks about Our Lady of Fatima with reference to Islam. And this is fascinating to me. This is fascinating. And of course, we know about the Battle of Lepanto, Our Lady of Victory, and Our Lady of the Rosary. That feast day, of course, is so tied into that. There was a point in history where, if it were not for Our Lady's intervention, and so many praying the Rosary for that intervention, it is quite possible that Europe would have been overrun. The West would have been overrun by Islam. And Hilaire Belloc, who is a Catholic writer who was very prolific in the early part of the 20th century, he once wrote that if Islam is a heresy, And he thinks it's a heresy. And this, we'll get into this in just a minute. But a lot of people think that Islam is actually technically a Christian heresy. And we'll get into why that is in just a minute. But Hilaire Belloc was one Catholic writer who believed that to be true. And Fulton Sheen said, if Islam is a heresy, as Belloc believes it to be, it's the only heresy that has never declined, because other heresies have had this kind of moment of vigor, as he calls it. And then when the founder of whatever heresy, pick a heresy, any heresy throughout the history of the church, there have been a lot. We talked about Arianism recently, and the great hero that was Saint Athanasius, one of the great heroes of Orthodoxy, Nicene Orthodoxy. A lot of heresies throughout the history of the church have had this moment of, you know, where they're really going strong, and then after the original heretic dies, the leader, then it kind of goes into decay, and then it eventually just kind of fades away. But according to Hilaire Belloc, Islam never has faded away. There's never been a time in which it declined in numbers or in the devotion of its followers. And Archbishop Fulton Sheen talked about how most missionary efforts to a Muslim people have been, by and large, a failure throughout history. And it's very difficult. It's not unheard of. There are Muslims who convert to Catholicism, but it's very hard. It's very difficult. And one of the reasons is because in a lot of majority Muslim countries, they don't allow missionaries into those countries. And so he goes on to say this. This is fascinating. Archbishop Fulton Sheen wrote that Islam will eventually be converted to Christianity in a way that even some of our missionaries would never suspect. It is our belief that this will happen not through the direct teaching of Christianity, but through a summoning of the Muslims to a veneration of the Mother of God. Now, this is where Fatima comes in. This is really interesting stuff. So I'm just going to quote Fulton Sheen at length here. He says, the Quran has many passages concerning the Blessed Virgin. First of all, the Quran mentions her Immaculate Conception and also the virgin birth of Christ. The third chapter of the Quran places the history of Mary's family in a genealogy that goes all the way back through Abraham, Noah, and Adam. And there's an apocryphal writing. It didn't make it into the Bible. It talks about the birth of Mary that Sheen refers to. And he says, when you compare that with the Quran's description of the birth of Mary, it seems as if the Quran is dependent upon this apocryphal Christian tradition about the birth of Mary. Both the Quran and this ancient Christian tradition talk about the mother of Mary, Saint Anne, being in her old age, being past childbearing years, and she conceives, of course. And when she conceives Mary in her womb, Saint Anne says in the Quran, she says, quote, O Lord, I vow and consecrate to you what is already within me. Accept it from me. And then when Mary is born, she says, I consecrate her with all of her posterity under thy protection, O Lord, against Satan. Wow, that's very interesting, because obviously, even in the book of Genesis in the Bible, there is this prophecy, the proto-evangelium in Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve fall into sin. God says, hey, what's going to happen here is that there is going to be enmity in the future between, he's talking to the devil here, to the serpent, between you and the woman. Total enmity. Now, he can't be talking about Eve, because Eve is somehow in league with Satan by giving in to sin. She's kind of cooperating with him at some level, of course. So this woman can't be Eve. It's got to be the new Eve. It's got to be Mary, because total enmity means total opposition. And this is part of the biblical justification for the Immaculate Conception, that Mary was conceived without stain of original sin, because she's in total enmity. There's no way, shape or form, that she has any kind of cooperation with the enemy. And she notes that the Quran doesn't really talk so much about Joseph in Mary's life. But the tradition, the Muslim tradition, does know of Joseph, his name. It has a tradition about him. And apparently in Muslim tradition, he asks Mary, hey, how in the world did you conceive Jesus without a father? Obviously, it's a paraphrase here that I'm giving you. And Mary basically says, do you not know that God, when he created the wheat, had no need of seed, and that God by his power made the trees grow without the help of rain? All that God had to do was to say, so be it, and it was done. So interesting, and this is part of how and why a lot of people view Islam as deriving from Christianity. Really kind of a combination of Christian beliefs, Jewish beliefs, and Arabic traditions kind of fused together. That's a theory that some people have. That's a theory that some people have. And apparently Muhammad never met an Orthodox Christian that we know of in his lifetime. He did meet a lot of heretics, though, a lot of Christians with false beliefs, like the Nestorians. They're very, very prevalent in his part of the world. And so this isn't really a show about that, but I do want to give some background on this. Apparently, according to Archbishop Fulton Sheen, the Quran has verses on the Annunciation, the Visitation, the Nativity. Angels accompany the Blessed Mother and say, O Mary, God has chosen you and purified you and elected you above all the women of the earth. And in the 19th chapter of the Quran, there are 41 verses about Jesus and Mary. And there's a huge, a very strong defense of the perpetual virginity of Mary. And in fact, there's even some talk in the Quran about all the calumnies against the Virgin Mary that were brought about throughout history. And it's true. There certainly were a lot of calumnies that were brought against Our Lady. And people knew, even in Jesus' time, they knew that there was something different about his birth. He had a lot of enemies, and even in the Gospels, in John's Gospel, some of Jesus' interlocutors, some of his opponents say, hey, we don't need to be, and I'm paraphrasing here, we don't need to be taught by you. We were not conceived in sin. You know, they sort of cast doubt on the legitimacy of his birth. So the point of that means that the point of that is really that people knew there was something different about Jesus' birth, the situation surrounding it. Now, they didn't know that he was conceived in the womb of the Virgin by the power of the Holy Spirit, but they knew there was something different. There was something up there, and unfortunately, there were a lot of calumnies, a lot of really, really evil shade that was thrown towards Our Lady. For example, it became well known in the early centuries that there's this, here's one of them, this concept that Jesus' real father was a Roman soldier named Ben Panthera, or the son of the panther, and he had had some sort of a dalliance with Mary. And this is just blasphemy, of course, but I just bring that up to say that these types of things were rampant in the early centuries, and a lot of them continue to this day. So Muslims have a lot of respect for Mary, unlike some of these originators of the calumnies against her, and they call her the true Sayyida, or the true lady. And so here's where Fatima comes in. This is fascinating stuff, and Sheen brings this up in his book. Who was Muhammad's daughter? Her name was Fatima. That was his favorite daughter. And when Fatima died, Muhammad wrote these words, "You shall be the most blessed of all women in paradise after Mary, after Mary." And there's another a version of this story where Fatima says, "I surpass all women except Mary." So all of this is kind of background to why it was that Mary chose to appear, that God sent her to appear in Fatima, in this very insignificant little town, of Fatima, this little tiny village in Portugal, that we know her as Our Lady of Fatima. And so Archbishop Fulton Sheen says, you know, God is in the details, and I don't believe that this is an accident by any stretch of the imagination, and he thinks that Mary appeared there partially. There's a lot of other reasons too, obviously, which Our Lady of Fatima talked about, but he thinks that there's also kind of a sign of hope here, that there's a chance, there's a glimmer of hope for the conversion of at least some Muslims, and hopefully many, that they who show Mary such respect will one day come to believe in her divine son, that she will show them the way. And so, by the way, why is this town called Fatima? Well, Muslims occupied Portugal for many centuries, and when they finally left, there was one remaining Muslim chief, and he had a beautiful daughter. Her name was also Fatima, named after the daughter of Muhammad. This girl, this Fatima, this daughter of the last Muslim chief, fell in love with a young man who was Catholic. And when the Muslims pulled up stakes and left town, basically the chief said, "You're either with us or you're going to stay with him." And she said, "I'm going to stay with him. I'm going to stay with him." And so she stayed behind. She married this young Catholic man, and she actually embraced the Catholic faith, converted. And this husband basically became, this young guy became essentially the mayor of the town later on, and he changed the name of the town to the name of his wife. He loved her so much, he changed the name of the town to Fatima. And that's where Mary appeared in 1917. So there's a connection here between Mary and the name of the daughter of Muhammad, Fatima. And so there's a link there. And the pilgrim statue of Our Lady of Fatima, when it appeared, when it went to Africa, when it went to India, and there were a lot of Muslim populations there that really embraced this. They would come out and they would honor Our Lady. They would actually let people have prayers before the mosques, in front of the mosques. And in Mozambique, many Muslims there actually started to convert to Christianity as soon as they caught wind of, as soon as they saw Our Lady of Fatima, the statue, and they heard about the story. So this is really interesting. I think that Archbishop Fulton Sheen brought up something that was really fascinating in his book, The World's First Love, Mary, Mother of God, because this idea that Muslims already have a devotion to Mary, that may be the way to talk to them about Mary's son, that she can point them to him. Just as she says in the Gospel of John, you know, to the servants at the wedding feast at Cana, do whatever he tells you, that she will point them to Christ. So it's something to pray about, something to think about. And I just thought it was a unique story to tell on this, the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. Well, there's so much more to talk about today on the Cale Clark Show. Hope you'll call in, 888-914-9149, if you want to react to that. And I'm going to tell about another person who converted to Catholicism, in part because of Our Lady of Fatima. It's an incredible story. I can't wait to share that with you. It's kind of a modern-day story of somebody who looked for God everywhere, couldn't find him, tried to satisfy himself with all the world had to offer, came up empty. But God spoke to him, and so did Our Lady of Fatima. Plus, the week that was is also coming up on the show. You're not going to want to miss that. 888-914-9149's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
And welcome back to the program on this Friday. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. It's been a great week on the show, and we've got coming up our special package of highlights called The Week That Was. It's put together by our producer, Jim Shaper. I can't wait to share that with you later in the show. That's coming up. And of course, you can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We were talking before the break about Our Lady of Fatima. Why Fatima? Why did she appear there? And a great theory by Archbishop Fulton Sheen. And by the way, you can hear Archbishop Sheen. We've still got his recordings every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Central right here on Relevant Radio. And as I said, he's kind of a spiritual father of Relevant Radio in so many ways, trying to reach the world for Christ through the media. And this idea that there's a link between Fatima and the Muslims that, you know, we can use to maybe evangelize them. Maybe Mary is the key to the evangelization of Muslims. That's a great theory. And if you missed that, if you missed the first part of the show, you can check the podcast later. It should be up at about an hour or so after the program ends. And I remember another a conversion from Judaism that Our Lady of Fatima had a lot to do with. And it was the conversion of Roy Schoeman. And he's now a Catholic. He's written, or at least edited and compiled, a couple of books. One that he wrote is called Salvation is from the Jews. It's a really intriguing book. It talks about the role of the Jewish people in God's plan of salvation all the way from Abraham up until the second coming of Christ. And he's also got another one, which is really a compilation of conversion stories. It's called Honey from the Rock. It's really cool. And it's about 16 people who are now Hebrew Catholics. They found Christ. They found the Catholic Church. They found the Messiah, and how the Catholic Church is the fulfillment of Judaism. Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. A really cool book, and his own conversion story is in there as well. And Roy Schoeman kind of had the world at his feet. He went to MIT, a really intelligent guy, went to MIT, he became a computer engineer, he moved to Denmark, worked there for a while, moved back, he went to Harvard Business School, got his MBA from there. And then he kind of went into the corporate world. He basically became a management consultant. He was really successful. And in fact, Harvard lured him back to teach in the MBA program. So he was kind of on a tenure track position. And he was only 29 years old. I mean, he was really on top of the world, or so it seemed. But that's really when his conversion story started. And he wrote this in his own little conversion story in the book, Honey from the Rock. He said, quote, "After my initial euphoria at the ego gratification of being a Harvard professor and the adulation of all the students wore off, I found myself in a deeper despair than ever." End of quote. And it's interesting. Yesterday on the program, we were talking with John Scott, former NHL player, and he talked about how a lot of his colleagues, professional athletes, who everybody thinks, you know, they have it all together. They've got to be happy. They've got financial security. They get to play a game that they love for pay. Lots of fans, lots of adulation, all the trappings of fame. But a lot of them are miserable. A lot of them are miserable, and they're human beings. We sometimes forget this. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I remember the first time I saw one of my elementary school teachers in the grocery store outside, and it kind of freaked me out. It was seeing my teacher outside of the classroom, right? Like, this person actually has to buy groceries. They have a life. They're a normal person. And it's just seeing somebody in a different context, right? Says something about their humanity. This is a full human person with all kinds of issues and problems like we all have, and yet also a desire for God that they may not even know is in their hearts. And so Roy Schoeman says this. He said that all his life he was searching for the real meaning in life, for the essential, for God. But unfortunately, that before he grew up, he says, he fell into, well, not so much fell into, but raced headlong into sin. And he said when that intoxication wore off, He just was pained by these hunger pangs, hunger for real meaning in life, but he couldn't find it. And I thought that was kind of interesting, this idea of hunger pangs for real meaning in life, because sin is kind of like junk food, right? Junk food makes you happy for a little while, tastes good, but it doesn't have the nutrients that you need. Obviously, it can actually harm you. And so Roy Schoeman, as a young man, tried everything under the sun, what the world considered to be success. He went for it. He said when that intoxication wore off, he was pained by a hunger for real meaning in life. But he kept it down. He kept himself distracted, he said, by the challenges, the gratifications of every new ambition, every new accomplishment. But He says at this point, though, he'd reached the end of the road. He can't get any better than this. He got into Harvard Business School. He was a star there. He took a really high-paying job when he graduated, and now he's back. He's in the faculty. He's teaching at Harvard. He's on a tenure-track career. But he said, despite all this, nothing had any real meaning for him. And he said he had one last false consolation in life before God got a hold of him, and that was downhill skiing. He was really into this as a youth, but he gave it up when he went to college, and he now took it up again with a vengeance, and he went every winter for several months on ski vacations in the Alps, in the Swiss Alps, and he actually was hanging out with professional skiers, Olympic skiers, people on the professional circuit. Those were his buddies. He was kind of, you know, competing with them, if you will. He lived for skiing. And he said, you know, God uses everything in our lives to bring us to him. And believe it or not, these, you know, kind of hedonistic ski vacations that he used to take, that's when he became aware, he says, of the existence of God for the first time in years. He was high up on a Swiss mountain. He was well above the tree line, and it was shortly after sunset. He said he saw the sky glowing a soft red, and the snow and the granite cliffs were glowing blue in the twilight. I mean, he paints an amazing picture here, right? And he says that his heart opened with gratitude, and he knew, somehow he knew inside, that such beauty had been created by God. And it just so happened that where he was staying at the time, he was actually in Austria, and he happened to be staying in this sort of bed and breakfast, I guess, you know, kind of a precursor to an Airbnb. And it was a very Catholic town that he was in. He would see beautiful crucifixes everywhere, in the hotels, in people's houses, in restaurants, even along the ski trails. It was a small town, but the church was packed every Sunday for Mass. And in the bed and breakfast where he was staying, there was a crucifix over his bed. And he would take it down every night because, you know, he came from a Jewish background, but he was pretty nominally Jewish. And he said, I did not want a cross, you know, over my head as I'm sleeping. So he'd take it off the wall, stick it in a drawer. And every day when he'd come back from skiing, the old pious Catholic lady who owned the bed and breakfast, she would put that cross back on the wall. You know, and she wouldn't say anything to him about it, but she'd put the crucifix back up. He was like, okay. But even then, this skiing, you know, it was his one last sort of attempt at naturalistic happiness, but he eventually became despondent. And so he returned home to the U.S., and one day he was in Cape Cod, and he was walking in a nature preserve, and he was in the low pine brush, just in the vicinity of the dunes on Cape Cod, and he says he fell into heaven. That's an actual quotation from him. He said he fell into heaven, Roy Shoman. What does that mean? Well, he kind of had this mystical experience. And somehow, you know, obviously a subjective experience, but he said that he found himself very consciously aware that he was in the presence of God. Somehow the veil had dropped. And he said he felt like he could see around him or feel around him what had always been there in the unseen world. And he said, wow, it was really hard to tell. Like, he was kind of going in and out of consciousness almost. He says one moment he felt like he was just walking along lost in thought. And then the next moment he would feel as if he was in the very presence of God himself, looking at his own life as if it was after death already. You know, looking back at his past in God's presence, you know, this is your life kind of situation. And he said this, he said, quote, I saw everything that I would be happy about and everything I would wish I had done differently. I saw that everything I'd ever done was recorded, had a moral content that mattered for all eternity, and that for all eternity I would be grateful for every right choice I had ever made. I saw that everything that had ever happened to me, especially those things that seemed the worst disasters at the time, the things that had caused the most suffering, had been the most perfect things that could have been arranged for me by the hand of an all-knowing, all-loving God. I saw that my two greatest regrets, he said, when I died, would be all the time and energy I had wasted worrying about not being loved, when every moment of my existence I was held in an ocean of love, greater than I could imagine coming from this all-loving God, although I was unaware of it. And every hour that I had wasted not doing anything of value in the eyes of heaven. And I knew, he says, from one moment to the next, that the meaning and purpose of my life was to worship and serve this God, my Lord and Master, who was revealing himself to me. So he had this amazing mystical experience, and Roy Showman says that he prayed right there on the spot, and he said, I want to know your name. I want to know your name so that I can know what religion to follow. Let me know your name so I can worship you, serve you properly. I don't mind if you're Buddha and I have to become a Buddhist. I don't mind if you're Krishna and I have to become a Hindu. I don't mind if you're Apollo and I have to become a Roman pagan, as long as you're not Christ and I have to become a Christian. Well, Roy Showman says that God really respected his prayer and didn't reveal himself to him at that time. But he went back to Cambridge, Massachusetts a few days later, and he said he was happy. After this experience, he was happy for the first time in his life since he was a child. He was, and the euphoria of that experience lasted for weeks, because he had just been in agony over the meaninglessness of life, and he had tried to find meaning in sinful pursuits, in hedonism, in accomplishment, you know, being a professor at Harvard Business School. Nothing did the trick. But after this experience that he had, you know, with God, this mystical experience walking on Cape Cod, he said that now he knew that life had infinitely more meaning than he ever could have imagined or hoped for. Every hour, every moment has a moral meaning, has a moral content that matters for all eternity. And every moment we have the opportunity to do something, the benefits of which we can enjoy for all eternity. He says that the slightest good action, he knew when he had this experience, the slightest good, the most seemingly to us insignificant good that we can do is noted by heaven and appreciated by the most loving God. And even if we never got a reward, could never hope for a reward for any good that we would do in this life, just doing it for God, doing it to please him alone, is more than enough to give infinite meaning to all our deeds. And so he became extremely happy, you know, realizing this stuff. And so he kind of got this, I guess you could say, infused knowledge about God through this experience, but he still didn't know too much about this God. And who exactly was he? What religion should he join? Where should he start? And so he knew this guy at MIT that he had been friends with when he was a student there. And this guy was, in his spare time, he considered himself kind of a mystic. He says, I'll go see this guy and see if he can guide me in any way. And so he went to his place one night. He said, the guy was of no help to me. He really didn't help me at all. But it was really providential that I went to his apartment, because while I was there, Roy Showman said that he noticed this really big, heavy coffee table book that this guy had. It was called something like The 100 Greatest Miracles of Modern Times. The 100 Greatest Miracles of Modern Times. He started picking it up and looking through it. And then he finds the story of Our Lady of Fatima, the appearances to the shepherd children. And he'd never heard of this before in 1917 in Portugal. And he asked his friend, hey, what's up with this? Is this really true? And his friend said, yeah, I think it's true. And he's like, does anybody else know about this? Did anybody else write about this? Like this miracle of the sun. Oh my goodness. Almost 100,000 people saw this live in October of 1917. And nobody told me about this. I've never heard of this before. What is the deal with this? And Roy Showman said that when he was a young kid and he was growing up in Hebrew school, he kept complaining to the rabbis, hey, how come God doesn't perform miracles today? I keep hearing about miracles in Old Testament times. Why not today? And he's like, here, an actual miracle happened in the 20th century, the miracle of the sun, 100,000 people saw it live, newspapers wrote about it, and he didn't know about it. And so he just couldn't get the story of Our Lady of Fatima out of his mind. And so, he didn't come into the Catholic Church then. He didn't come into the Catholic Church then. For a while, he started looking into the New Age movement, dabbling in some unhealthy meditation practices, just trying to connect with the divine through nature. But he eventually found Christ. And this is another kind of mystical experience that he had. He says that he had a dream. Roy Shoman had a dream. It was a year to the day after this first experience that he had on Cape Cod, this, you know, this sense that God was speaking to him, revealing his life choices to him. And a year to the day, he went to sleep. He thanked God for all he had experienced in the past year. And then he says he said, look, if you had a video camera on me, he said, I'm sure that the video camera would show me asleep. But he said it seemed like he was a gentle hand touched him on the shoulder while he was asleep, woke him up, and then he walked into a room, and he was alone in the room with the most beautiful young woman that he had ever seen. And he knew instantly, nobody had to tell him, he knew instantly that the woman was Mary. And in this dream and this vision that he had, she says, you can ask me any question that you want and I'll answer it. And so he's like, wow, the beauty of her voice, incredible. The beauty of her appearance, amazing. But he felt this love flowing from her. And he said, man, I wish I knew the words to the Hail Mary because I know it's her. I don't know what to say to her. I wish I could say the Hail Mary. So he asks her in this vision, what is your favorite prayer? What is your favorite prayer? The favorite prayer that people address to you, asking for your intercession. And she tells him, I love all prayers to me, but he kept pushing. He's like, oh, come on, you got to love one more than the others. And so she said, she apparently recited a prayer to him in Portuguese. It's kind of interesting because Our Lady of Fatima, of course, is in Portugal. So she recites a prayer in Portuguese, and he knew it was in Portuguese. He didn't know Portuguese, but he's like, I somehow know this is Portuguese. I don't understand the words that she's saying, but he kind of remembers it in his mind phonetically. He kind of memorized the way it sounded. And when he woke up the next morning, he wrote it down. And he eventually figured out that this was the prayer that she said, O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to you. But it was the Portuguese version of that prayer. And of course, that prayer is an allusion, of course, to Fatima, but also it's given by Mary at another apparition in 1830, the famous Rue de Bac apparition to Saint Catherine Laboure. And of course, the miraculous medal comes from that, right? And so anyways, in his dream, he apparently asked Mary four or five more questions, and they had this conversation, and he woke up. And when he woke up from this dream, he realized that a year before, it was Christ that was speaking to him. He didn't identify himself as Christ, but he somehow had this mystical experience with Christ. Then he meets his mother, and then he's like, I got to become a Christian. I have to. So he starts checking out local churches. He starts going to some Protestant communities, and he asks one minister. He starts talking to him about Mary. I think Mary appeared to me, and he was like, whoa, get out of here. You know, like, so he said some things about Mary that were disrespectful in Roy Shoman's eyes, and he's like, this is no place for me. Now, not to say that there are many, many Protestants that do have respect for the Blessed Virgin, but this particular guy kind of turned him off, and he's like, well, I'm just going to try to find Marian shrines. So he started hanging out at Catholic Marian shrines, and he just developed this incredible hunger to receive the Eucharist, and he eventually asked for baptism, and he got it. So there's much more to his conversion story, and you can check this out. In this book, Honey from the Rock, he tells his conversion story, Roy Shoman, along with 15 others who converted from a Jewish background to Catholicism. It's a really powerful story. And I just thought, that's kind of a cool one to share on this feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be back right after this break. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. If you have a question, a take on all this, call in. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car. All All right, welcome back to the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call for the Cale Clark Show. And hey, it's Friday, as you know, and you know what that means. Friday means the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. So here's your highlight package, courtesy of producer Jim. It is a serious thing, C.S. Lewis says, to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses. To remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you can talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship. That's this concept of the resurrected body, the glorification that God has in store for us, and the new heaven, the new earth. This is the true hope that we have, that we have to live our present life in light of that. When I go to Chick-fil-A, they never say you're welcome. If you say thank you to one of their employees, they give you your chicken sandwich, whatever, your waffle fries. I know producer Jim loves the waffle fries. If you say, oh, thank you, Jim, do you know what they say?
My pleasure.
That's right. They say, my pleasure. It's kind of a small gesture, but it means a lot. I saw a piece, and it was a guest essay that was written by a guy named Shalom Auslander, who is an author, and it seems that Shalom has not made peace with God, if you'll pardon the pun. But yeah, so his essay was called, this is the title of it, In This Time of War, I Propose We Give Up God. Wow. An illustration that C.S. Lewis brought up in one of his books, which was called God in the Dock. This is like a courtroom scenario. It's like one of my favorite movies, A Few Good Men, you know.
You can't handle the truth!
Well, the dock is sort of the witness stand, if you will. Basically, C.S. Lewis says that there's a huge difference between people in the past and modern human beings, because the ancient man approached God, or even the gods, as the accused person approaches his judge. For the modern man, the roles are quite reversed. He is the judge. God is in the dock, and he is quite a kindly judge. If God should have a reasonable defense for being the God who permits war, poverty, and disease, he's ready to listen to it. The trial may even end in God's acquittal. But the important thing is that man is on the bench and God is in the dock, end of quote. So this idea that modern people are sitting in judgment of God, it's kind of a dangerous position, but I do think that is where we're at today. I want to welcome back to the program a very special guest. He played almost 10 years in the National Hockey League. There is one movie coming out about his life. John Scott is once again my guest. As I said, John, I'm very open to playing the role of Gary Bettman, you know, who'd be the villain of the film. And
you guys have similar personalities. You're very unlikable, and it would be not a far stretch for you.
David is calling from Tampa, Florida, where my Leafs are playing tonight. Hello, David.
I'm living in Tampa, but born and raised in Toronto, so I'm a huge Leafs fan. And how did your Catholic faith help you through the pressure and the situation where it seemed that the powers that be were intent on you not playing in that game?
God puts people in your life. I firmly believe my wife was my rock. Like, I wanted to quit and give up and back out and go home and just quit and do. And the whole time she was like, no, you know, these people don't have your best interests. Just keep plugging along, keep chugging along, and something good will come of this. And she was the reason I stuck. And now, you know, looking back, I'm like, gosh, you know, that was God working through her to kind of get through to me. Because if it was anybody else, I would have just said, you know, kick rocks, I'm not listening to you. But it was my wife, and, you know, we're one flesh, and I listened to her. And then it turned out great. And now I think because of that All-Star game, I have this platform, and I'm hopefully going to and trying to use, like, for the gospel.
Jim, coming through in the clutch once again with the week that was. Man, I quoted C.S. Lewis an awful lot this week, didn't I? It's hard not to. It's hard not to, but my thanks to Big John Scott for joining me yesterday. He's probably listening right now in Traverse City, Michigan. And yep, I do want to play Gary Bettman in the John Scott story, which is a real, I don't know if it's going to be called that, but it's a real movie about his life. It's going to be coming out. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that. It is in the works, written by Mitch Albom. So if you missed any of these episodes of The Cale Clark Show this week, you can binge listen to them on your weekend by simply going to relevantradio.com, going to the show page, or or going to the app, or wherever you get your podcasts, you can stream them, you can share them. And hey, it's really important to, if you like the show, share it with a friend. That's how most people find out about Relevant Radio, is through friends, through word of mouth. So it's really important. Never, never discount what you can do to bring people to Christ through the media, through Relevant Radio. You're part of the team, right? So speaking of that, we're going to go to the phones right now. Norbert is calling from Long Beach, California. Hi, Norbert.
Hi, Kel. Good afternoon or good evening, wherever.
Yeah, wherever, whatever time it is. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
All right. Yeah, Kel, I was very grateful and inspired by your Faith Explained episode yesterday on the Bonding with James series that you did, particularly yesterday's segment on how you explain how our wealth and our goal in life should be towards what leads us to what is eternal. And being in a university that's secular in Long Beach State, mm-hmm. Thankfully, I was able to receive some of the services that the Focus missionaries from our diocese provide us with. And I kind of reflected on how James kind of shared that wisdom that you furthermore explained about how wealth eventually will corrode and kind of corrupt. And then you said about how cars like Corvettes and you know, Bugattis will eventually rust. And I compared
not that I would know about that, yeah. Norbert, by the way. I've never had a Bugatti.
Yeah, something about that with the cars or something. But
yeah, I did talk about cars. You know, yeah, I did.
So I lost my regret and kind of, you know, stopped looking at, you know, buying physical, you know, Nintendo cartridges, just trying to play a game without, you know, being attached to it. So I really appreciate your show. And thank you for all the Faith Explained programs that I continue to take note on. Thank you, Kel.
Oh, God bless you, Norbert. Thank you very much for that encouraging phone call. I really appreciate that. Really appreciate that. It's Norbert calling from Long Beach, California, where he goes to Long Beach State. And he's been listening to the Faith Explained show, which is the other show that I host on Relevant Radio. And right now we're going through the series on the life of James, who wrote the letter of James in the New Testament. And James has a lot of great wisdom to share. He's really a sage. So that's another one. That's another set of shows you can binge listen to and anytime you want through the podcast. And yeah, it's true. James talks a lot about, you know, how wealth eventually rusts away and we've got to lay up our treasures in heaven. And it could be anything. It could be a vehicle. It could be, you know, Norbert talked about Pokemon cards. And people still play that, by the way. There's like a Pokemon hotspot right at the end of my street, actually. And you'll see cars there at all hours of the night, people trying to catch Pokemon through the game. And, wow, it's still a thing. Yeah. And, hey, but there are more important things, and I think we'd all agree on that. So thanks for that call, Norbert. Really appreciate that. That was really encouraging. God bless you. And we're going to go now back to California, to Irvine, California, to Daniel. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. What's going on there in Irvine?
You know, I'm so glad that you're bringing up Roy Schumann, because he's done so much for my faith.
Awesome.
And one story I want to share, it's on his book, Honey from the Rock.
Honey from the Rock, yeah.
There's a story of a Jewish convert, Mary Alphonse Ratisbone.
Yes, he's one of the more famous converts, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the main reason, or how I started wearing a miraculous medal, is because of the story he shared in that book. And he walked into a church. It was like he was visiting or traveling with a friend that lived in Rome, mm-hmm. and he was like showing him around the different, you know, sites while he was there. Well, not only was he he was Jewish, but he was like anti-Catholic. He detested the Catholic Church and everything that was Catholic. And while he was like traveling in Rome, he was visiting his brother's friend or something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, and this friend was Catholic. And Ratisbone, anytime he got, he would, you know, he would kind of knock the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And he thought it was just a big joke. So the Catholic friend, he dared him to wear the miraculous medal and pray the memorari. So I'm making the story very short. So then they walked into this Catholic friend was arranging a funeral for another friend. They happened to go to this church, and which was the The church name was Santa Andrea della Fonte, Frati in Rome.
And we got about 30 seconds, Daniel. Oh, okay. Can you sum it up?
So basically, what I want to sum it up, it's a wonderful story. It's incredible, and I think people should look that up. And I just happened to be in Rome in 2018, and by chance, I happened to walk into that same church late at night, and they were about to close down. And I asked the priest, because they had the pews facing the side altar, right? And I just happened to run into the priest, and I said, "Father, why are the pews facing the side altar?" And then he goes, "Well, back in the 1800s, there was a Jewish convert that were Mary appeared to him right at the side altar."
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Hey, I got to jump in there, Daniel. But I encourage people to check that out. It's a great ad for that book, Honey from the Rock. It's got a lot of great conversion stories there. Check it out. Really want to thank everybody for listening today. And Jim produced, Patrick took your calls. Take it away, Michaela. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.